Welcome to the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast. I'm Aaron Goodman, host and founder of the podcast. I'm a journalist, documentary maker, university instructor, and communication studies researcher. And I've lived with multiple chemical sensitivity, or MCS, for years. MCS is also known as environmental illness, chemical intolerance, and toxicant-induced loss of tolerance, or TILT, and it affects millions around the world. As you know, many people with the condition are dismissed by healthcare workers, employers, friends, and even family. Countless people with MCS struggle to find healthy housing, get accommodation at work and school, and we suffer in all kinds of ways. The purpose of the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast is to help raise awareness about MCS and what it's like for people who live with it. We featured interviews with some of the world's leading experts and researchers on MCS, and lots of people with the condition, and we're just getting started. I'm grateful to listeners who support the podcast. If you'd like to make a monthly contribution or one-time donation, please find links on the website, chemicalsensitivitypodcast.org. Your support will help us continue making the podcast available and creating greater awareness about MCS. Thank you very much. The podcast belongs to the community. The purpose is to advocate for all of us, and your help means a lot. This is episode 36. It's called Autobiography and MCS. It features a conversation with Sophia Verino, PhD. Sophia is a professor at the University of Potsdam in Germany. They specialize in gender studies, cultural studies, and the environment. In this conversation, you'll hear Sophia explore their research about how two writers and one filmmaker, all with MCS, document their personal experiences with the illness. Sophia talks about the 2013 book, Kindling: Writings on the Body, by Aurora Levins Morales, the 1995 documentary, Funny You Don't Look Sick, and the 2013 documentary, Homesick, by singer and filmmaker Susan Abbott, who's been a guest on this podcast, and the work of author and activist Peggy Munson. I'll provide links to these three people's websites in the show notes. It's a really deep conversation, and I hope you find Sophia's research and insights fascinating and helpful. We release new episodes twice a month. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on social media. Just search for the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast or Podcasting MCS. Leave your comments about anything you hear on the podcast, and please share the podcast with others. Find the podcast on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast and click subscribe. On YouTube, you can read captions in any language you like. Please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to help others learn about the podcast. And if there's someone you'd like to hear interviewed on the podcast or a topic you'd like us to explore, just let us know. Email info@chemicalsensitivitypodcast.org. And thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me, Sophia.
Thanks for having me, Aaron. I'm very glad to be here.
Would you like to say a little bit more about yourself and your research interests for people who are listening?
Sure. So I've been living in Berlin in Germany for the past 10 years. And before that, I was living in New York for 8 years. That's where I did my PhD. So a lot of my experiences are also shaped by being in the US. And I have been working in the field of gender studies and cultural studies since 2010, something like that. And currently I'm based at University of Potsdam here in Berlin, Brandenburg. And my research is really focusing on how bodies connect to their surrounding environments. So one of the guests you had previously in the podcast, Stacey Alimo, is certainly a reference for my work. And then, many other people who work in the field of new materialisms, science studies, environmental humanities, medical humanities. So those are sort of the broad disciplines that connect to my work. And lately, more so disability studies as well, and all the critical work that's being done in that field. So yes, my background is very transdisciplinary, and my work touches upon many different topics.
Thank you so much. And when it comes to MCS, when did you start to think about MCS? And for listeners, our discussion today is really going to focus on your research about autobiography and memoir. I'll ask you if that's the right word or the words that you use, but autobiography and MCS. And in your research, you look at several different works of this nature. When did you start to develop an interest in MCS?
So I first became aware of the existence of such a thing as MCS, I'd say around 2006. I was in a relationship with someone who had MCS. So prior to that, I had never come across this concept. Now, since I was a kid, I've had responses to chemicals, and that's something that, really permeated my daily experience that I was very aware of. But I had never realized that someone else might feel the same way. I thought that this was just, my own strange little world. And so meeting someone else who had this the same issues, although, to a much greater extent, was just very transformative. And then to realize that there was actually, a whole movement of activism around MCS, and that there were a lot of people already at that time online doing great work, and that MCS activism also intersected with other areas like, movements for clean air, or attempts at making environments safer for people with asthma or other respiratory conditions. So that for me was transformative. And then later, when I was doing my PhD, I decided that I wanted to write one chapter focusing specifically on MCS. And so the chapter you've read is just a small segment from my research. So I also look into biomedical articles, into clinical literature and fiction as well, that is all around MCS, or environmental illness, as it is often also called. And I wanted to focus on MCS memoirs specifically, because I think there's real value into looking at variability and how different people are experiencing MCS, because it is not the same for everyone, right? So my symptoms have always been quite mild and manageable. But the person I was in a relationship with had really severe reactions. And so that was something that was much harder to manage on a daily basis. And I just became very interested in these different narratives and how, where you live and what job you have, and your socioeconomic status, all of these things are really going to impact how you manage your symptoms.
Yeah, you raise really interesting points that I'd love to ask you more about around, people from marginalized or racialized groups, socioeconomically disadvantaged people, how, they experience this illness differently. If we come back to that, that would be really great. Do you want to perhaps briefly just let listeners know the three texts that you've looked at? I mean, I know you've looked at many more, but in our conversation today, what are the ones we're going to be talking about primarily?
So, one person who is sort of the first author I came across who was writing about their own personal experiences with MCS is Peggy Munson. And Peggy Munson has been very active through her blog, which she still maintains. And has really raised a great deal of awareness around what MCS is and how it can be managed, and has done a lot of activism around things like creating scent-free spaces. And I really enjoy her writing, and she's also a poet, so she's written quite a lot of poetry that is both autobiographical, and I would say, like all poetry, you can't just say it's autobiographical. It's also fictional, and it does all kinds of different things. So Peggy Munson is one of the authors I discuss. The other one is Aurora Morales, who has collected a lot of autobiographical accounts of her own experiences with environmental illness, and also looking at how it affects different groups of people, especially in the US. And then we will also talk about Susan Abbott, who has directed two documentaries. The first one, Funny You Don't Look Sick, is more about her own experiences with MCS. And the second one, Homesick, is kind of a road trip where she goes around the US and talks to different people impacted by MCS. So these are three narratives that I selected for the book chapter that has been published that you read. And I look at other narratives as well in my work.
Thank you. And I will, with your permission, share the chapter that you refer to that we'll be talking about with listeners. So that will be linked in the show notes. And Sophia, I just wanted to share, you were sharing your experience of living with MCS and feeling like you didn't know others who had the illness until you were in the relationship. I think that's really fascinating and quite common. And it's interesting, I find, in talking to people that often people with MCS have never spoken with others with MCS, which is kind of surprising in the sense because, the research shows that there are about up to 37% of the population in the US, which is likely similar in other countries that have this illness to varying degrees. But when you talk about your research and the memoirs that have been created, I have that same feeling, as someone listening to you, like the hair stands up on my, like I get the tinglys. I feel it's really important because I'm having that same reaction or that same response where your work is so vital because it's by reading and just knowing that other people live with this and write it and share their stories with the world. It makes me feel less alone. So thank you for your really important work. Are there many autobiographies or memoirs written, created by people with MCS?
Well, there are a lot of autobiographical accounts, and particularly in social media. So for a while, during my research, I was on Facebook quite a bit, and I got a lot of personal accounts about MCS. And sometimes, I mean, they were really detailed and very specific and quite fascinating because of that. Another author who also writes about their own personal experiences with MCS is Mel Chen, who's also a scholar. And in their book, Animacies, one of the chapters includes an account of experiencing MCS symptoms. And so this is quite rare because academics usually are discouraged from including autobiographical accounts in their work. So Mel Chen definitely is disrupting academic conventions by including this moment in the book. And I was so moved by reading it. Like you're saying, there's this moment of real recognition and solidarity and just kind of relief, actually, that someone is actually talking about these things. And in doing so, raising awareness. And I mean, I think that probably MCS symptoms are extremely common, but we don't necessarily talk about them. I mean, if anything, in our society, any kind of illness is stigmatized, right? So we have a lot of shame and guilt, around, all the symptoms that we might have. So I think in terms of, autobiographical accounts, there's a great deal of material on social media that I find now, but it is difficult for people to sort of, come out and really put themselves out there and say, "This is what I'm experiencing. This is what I've been dealing with." But I think it is very important. I mean, that's something that I'm considering in my work, including a little bit of my own autobiographical experiences with MCS, because I think it is important, even as now I'm moving more towards looking at clinical articles and reports. I'm really looking at the research that's being done on MCS, which is fascinating, but I also want to bring in my own personal experiences.
Oh, that'll be great. I really understand when you say it's not easy to do, just briefly about creating this podcast. I have to out myself, or I deliberately out myself as a university educator, and it's very stigmatized. So I understand what you're saying.
I think it's amazing that you're doing this, I have to say. It is really extraordinary that you're doing this project, and bringing so many of us together to talk about MCS.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. It's, when I've started it, I just didn't know who I would talk to, but it's so incredible to find out about the various work that's being done in many different fields. And it's really amazing to learn about your work, Sophia. I want to turn back to memoir. So this form of MCS memoir, and we're talking about three specific examples, one that happens to be film, one poetry, and the other, here's my brain fog.
The other one is more prose, I would say. So, like,
Right, yes.
kind of a more a memoir kind of writing. Yes.
Right. So in our conversation today, we're talking about a film, prose in the form of a book, and poetry. And as you write in your chapter, these three texts are part of a wider field or form of illness memoir, would you say?
Yes, I mean, we can think of them, we can call them patient narratives. That's a term that Lisa Diedrich uses in her book Treatments. We can think of them as a subgenre, perhaps, of memoir. I mean, certainly there's a large body of work around AIDS, especially coming from the 80s and the 90s. People like Audre Lorde, who wrote the cancer journals, also created a different way of writing about personal experience concerning illness. So, I mean, Susan Sontag has written a great deal about illness, not necessarily using an autobiographical mode, but still using what I would call a kind of memoir mode of address. So I think that if we want to look at MCS as a subgenre of these kinds of illness memoirs, because there really is, I mean, I argue that there are some very specific genre conventions to the MCS memoir. Like, there's a whole lot more of attention paid to the environment, like the lived environment around you. So, I mean, there are lists of ingredients or substances or, household detergents that you're supposed to avoid, brands, all these kinds of very detailed descriptions. Are part of MCS archive. And I find that fascinating and also very useful. I think researchers from every specialty should take more seriously the kinds of patient narratives that are circulating, because not that personal experience is the one place where you will find authenticity, but it has to be valued and taken into account in a way that I think the biomedical sciences are not doing yet.
Yeah. As you were sharing that, I was thinking or picturing a doctor reading or some of these books or watching, Susan Abbott's films, and it seems kind of implausible, and that's really kind of unfortunate, right? That there seems to be such a divide between just as many of us experience talking about our lived experience with the illness with physicians is so fraught with difficulty. May I ask you, Sophia, when you're looking at these texts, the MCS memoirs, are you looking for anything in particular as you're exploring these in an in-depth manner? What are you, what's particularly on your radar as you explore these texts?
So I'm really interested in accounts of the interior body or the visceral body, or you can think of it in terms of symptoms or any kind of embodied experience that is connected to the outside world. So to the world around you, to your surroundings. So to give an example, when Susan Abbott has this moment of covering her van in Danny Foyle. So that moment of creating just a different lived environment for yourself, those moments interest me greatly. Or, when people describe the way that a particular apartment or room or setting just, completely changed their experience for the next few months just because they were exposed to a particular chemical. I find those kinds of descriptions very fascinating because they really change how we think about the lived environment. We usually think about the world as that which surrounds us, and we think of ourselves as being completely separate from it. And I really think that's very inaccurate. And, we know from indigenous philosophies, we know from different ways of understanding the world, also from queer and feminist theory, we know that this is just not accurate. And we know it from our own lived experience. I mean, certainly for those of us who have experienced MCS symptoms, the world is contiguous with our bodies, and the world constitutes our bodies. So there's this constant flux, this constant exchange. And I'm really interested in seeing that materialize in MCS narratives, not only memoirs, but now that I'm doing more reading on the biomedical research, also in biomedical studies, just to see how bodies are permeable and how difficult it is to pinpoint. And this is part of the difficulty in MCS biomedical research, how to pinpoint how the body responds to one particular chemical substance is really, really hard to get at, because that body is surrounded by so many chemicals all the time. So when you get to a laboratory setting, it's very difficult to isolate the one chemical agent that is going to have a particular effect on the body. And this makes MCS very difficult to study. And that's partly why MCS is still not really a recognized condition. And I mean, certainly not in the biomedical sciences, So this is a real problem when you need things like, health insurance or accommodations at work, or to go on sick leave, or any of these practical matters are very much impacted by the biomedical research that so far cannot establish the connection between a chemical substance and a particular effect on a range of bodies. So, yeah, that's part of the conundrum. Yeah.
Yes, and as someone, since you've looked very closely at the biomedical research, what do you hope there will be as we move forward? Are you hopeful that there will be better research, more research?
I am actually. You know, it's very interesting in Susan Abbott's documentary. I think I mentioned this in the chapter you read, but I've written about it. There's a possibility that Abbott suggests for studying MCS in a different way, not at the lab, but rather looking at how people change according to their environment. So someone who is very sick in their apartment and then moves to a different space and improves substantially, it would be perfectly possible to envision a large scale study, particularly, you know, in a country like the US or countries like Germany that have, you know, substantial funding for large scale studies. It would be possible to create different research programs that would follow large groups of people with MCS symptoms and see how they would respond to exposure to chemicals in different settings that are not necessarily the lab. So I think part of the problem with studying MCS at the lab is that the lab itself, you know, which is a lab is a place like any other, right? So when you go into a lab to do a test, which usually is based on provocation tests and what are called challenge chambers, where you are exposed to different chemicals when you have MCS symptoms, I mean, you are going to be doused with other chemicals that are not necessarily part of the study. So this is a huge problem for studying MCS at the lab. So I think that Abbott's documentary kind of gives us an idea that I think could really be followed for studying MCS outside of a laboratory setting. And this would almost be like, you know, along the lines of an ethnographic study, but that could also include chemical exposure. I think that would be one possibility for studying MCS differently.
Well, yes, and relating to your research, your deep dives into MCS memoirs, do you view these texts as a form of research?
I mean, I do because, I mean, on the one hand, I think of it as qualitative research. I mean, there's really a lot of data that's generated through these kinds of studies. Although, I mean, the author might not be necessarily thinking of it in this way. For example, Abbott's documentary is kind of an ethnographic study of what is happening to people with MCS in the US. So it has that quality to it. But I don't think that Abbott necessarily was thinking of it in this way, right? It just came out of it. And of course, you know, documentary film and ethnography share a great deal of interest, and it's difficult to see the difference between the two many times. So I do think that, you know, just getting your experience down on paper or whatever medium you're comfortable with is valuable. I think that making yourself vulnerable in that way is really, really important. I think that a lot of people will get a lot of insight from your experience that you're not necessarily expecting. And this is part of, you know, illness memoir in general. Like a lot of people report this feeling of, oh, I really saw myself in what this person was describing. And I learned a lot from it for how to manage my symptoms, how to look for help, look for support, you know, just find different alternatives. So yes, I do think of autobiographical writing as a kind of study, kind of a way of doing research, and I take it very seriously. Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And as you were sharing, I'm thinking of you referred to social media and, I view it, and then maybe you do too, as a form of autoethnography, perhaps people sharing. Do you want to just kind of provide like a layperson's definition of ethnography and autoethnography?
Well, I would think of ethnography as, any kind of study that you can do where you talk to others and you gather information about their experience through that conversation and you record it. That's always going to be very much along the lines of an ethnographic study, even if, you don't have the credentials to call it that, or you haven't thought of it that way. But the body of information that you gather through those conversations is going to be an ethnographic study. And autoethnography, I would think of, really doing the same, except that you're kind of having a conversation with yourself. So you're putting down into words your experiences as you process them on your own and use writing to record them. And I think that even if you don't think of it that way, even if you just think, oh, this is just my silly ideas that I'm putting out there on Facebook and sharing with people who maybe don't even want to read it. I think that can certainly be autoethnographic in the way you are approaching it. And it's valuable for others. And it's certainly valuable for people like me who then, look at it and just get so much information, because I think the details are very much part of what's valuable about autoethnographic studies, just to get the detailed information that you wouldn't, the specificity of your situation, of what you are exposed to, just gathering all that information. I don't think there's any other way of doing it, of accessing so much information. Not in a general kind of way, but in a very specific, detailed way.
So Susan Abbott in her film Homesick, as you describe it, goes on a road trip, across a large part of the US many years ago in order to meet people, find out how people were living, what kind of housing they were building and creating and finding to find ways to be in the world. And so that you view as a form of ethnography. So that's really fascinating. I want to invite you to talk a little bit more about Abbott's film and Morales's book and Peggy Munson's work. But I'd like to ask you first, please. We've talked about how, even social media, these works, MCS memoir, can allow people who live with the illness to feel less alone, to understand that many others are also going through this. Living with a highly misunderstood and stigmatized illness. Do you think, Sophia, that this kind of work can change other people's minds, can open other people's minds, people who don't have the illness, can lessen the amount of doubt and stigma in the world, perhaps?
Perhaps. I think with certain segments of the population, it might actually have the opposite effect. I mean, I think that for people who are really set on the idea that, such an illness does not exist, MCS does not exist, we are all just imagining this. I can see how they could take, personal narratives, and they can actually mine those narratives to find further evidence that, of course, MCS does not exist. These people just have very vivid imaginations, so I think it can go both ways. I think there's definitely a tendency for seeing things in a very polarized way. So if you want to believe something, you're going to find a way to substantiate your beliefs. So I don't know that it can really change people's minds. I would hope that for some people who are not sure or who just are not aware, who just don't really know very much about MCS, I hope that it can make them aware. And most of all, I hope that it can be a call to action, you know, like just thinking about very practical things, like if you're more aware of how fragrances can impact people with MCS, maybe you will create or demand the next event that you organize or the ne next place where you teach to be scent-free, for example, right? So just by being exposed to these narratives, maybe you can be better informed. And so, you know, maybe they can also function as a call to action. That would be one of my hopes. But I'm not sure that they can change the minds of people who are too skeptical, you know? I think often people who are skeptical use all evidence to support what they already think they know about something.
Hi, just pausing briefly to say thanks for listening to the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast. You're listening to episode 36. It's called Autobiography and MCS. It features a conversation with Sophia Verino, PhD. I hope you get a lot out of the conversation and this episode. Please subscribe where you get your podcasts. If you'd like to support the podcast, please find links on the website, chemicalsensitivitypodcast.org. Your support will help us continue making the podcast available and creating greater awareness about MCS. Thank you very much. The podcast belongs to the community. The purpose is to advocate for all of us, and your help means a lot. So, in terms of the three texts, MCS memoirs that you looked at, Susan Abbott's Road Trip Movie, Homesick, Morales's book, Peggy Munson's poetry. In your chapter, you write about Abbott's journey, her exploration across parts of the U.S. to find how people were developing innovative ways of creating safe housing for themselves, free from chemicals, and many were from different socioeconomic backgrounds. You highlight that Morales's work looks at MCS not so much as the responsibility of the individual with the illness to get better from the illness, but she advocates for a, quote, public ecological sense of health as expansive and communal. And then Peggy Munson's poetry and writing, in Peggy Munson's work, Peggy looks at the connections between MCS and other illnesses. Because Peggy lives with MCS, fibromyalgia, Lyme disease, CFS. And I have that insight from reading your chapter and exploring Peggy's work a little bit. So, in brief terms, what kind of stands out to you in your mind about these three texts?
Well, I think that in different ways, whether intentionally or not, they really highlight the massive disparities in access to healthcare in the US in particular. So socioeconomic status really determines your options when you have MCS. And this is very prevalent in the US because, of course, there's no universal health care. If you go to and you analyze MCS in a country like Germany, you're going to see something quite different because access to health care is pretty much universal. So, you know, anyone could potentially take time off from work and recover if they have MCS. And they would be able to access, you know, different kinds of healthcare, even if the condition itself is not recognized within the healthcare system. But, you know, there are so many different symptoms that are part of the MCS clinical scenario. You know, you might have developed asthma. You might have a range of allergies. You might have developed skin conditions. You might be exhausted all the time. So all of these different symptoms are taken very seriously, and therefore you do have access to healthcare when you're a country where, you know, almost anyone can get healthcare. And Aurora Morales actually highlights that because at one point she describes how she goes to Cuba actually to get better because in the US she did not have access to health care. But through the Cuban healthcare system, she's able to, get the help that she needs. And in the case of Peggy Munson, there are also several references, particularly in Munson's blog, to all the difficulties economically that you have to face when you have MCS, because there are very few jobs that you can actually do if you have quite severe MCS. I mean, of course, now we have this revolution where more and more people are working from home. But before that, I mean, going into an office, working in a storage facility, working in a factory, all of these mean that you are going to be most likely exposed to chemical substances, even if it's just on the elevator, something that's, relatively innocuous can have a huge effect on you. So, I mean, that's really my biggest takeaway. And in Abbott's documentaries, although there is no explicit reference to these disparities in socioeconomic status, but you do see it in the films, right? Like, so you do see the big difference between someone who's, living in a van, or, in Abbott's case, she's actually also looking for safe housing for herself. Someone who's living in a tent, who's sleeping outside, and or someone who's living in a beautiful house that is chemically safe. So these are very different realities where, what's at stake for you when you decide to leave the city with all the pollution in your apartment? What's at stake for you in that move to a more rural area? Do you have the means to make that move, first of all? And are you going to be living in poverty if you do make that move? Or are you going to be living a relatively comfortable life? Or are you going to be living in luxury, right? So this is very, very different. And of course, just being able to have a doctor who can prescribe you medicine, painkillers, who can look after you, who can maybe not really believe that you have MCS, but at least help you to manage the symptoms. That's going to have a huge effect on MCS outcomes and prevent MCS from becoming much more serious, as it tends to do if it's untreated completely. So yes, that's my biggest takeaway.
Thank you. How do these autobiographies or MCS memoirs contrast with how most medical professionals tend to frame MCS and people with the illness?
That's such a good question. I mean, I think that the biggest difference is really central the physical symptoms are in these narratives. I mean, so much is about how you feel, how exhausted you are, how you're in pain, headaches, just kind of feeling like your body is completely breaking down. Whereas I think in the standard dominant clinical narrative, MCS is so much more about a kind of, psychological disorder or a psychological condition where you just don't feel well and you develop this kind of paranoia about your surroundings. Like you start to believe in this fantasy that, nail polish is giving you a headache or this scented product is making it hard for you to breathe. I think in the standard clinical model of MCS, it's much more about this kind of paranoia about your surroundings. But in when you look at the MCS memoirs I've been looking at, it's so much about visceral symptoms. It's so much about your body just not being able to control what your body does. So that's a huge, huge difference.
And is there a freedom to document one's experience without any shame or apology or fear of what a medical professional will say? So do you find that there's a freedom to be as one is in these memoirs?
I mean, I think I do see it. I wonder how much the writers actually leave out, or in the case of Abbott, I wonder how much was edited out of the documentaries, because I can also imagine that, there are things that we cannot admit even to ourselves. And I mean, language is tricky and writing is tricky. So I imagine that there's a great deal of lived experience that does not find its way into these narratives, either because it's too extreme or because, language has its limitations. So I wonder what do we not see actually in these narratives? And I try to think of it in terms of my own, very limited experience, the body being out of control and how much we just are in our bodies experiencing things, but we cannot prevent our bodies from experiencing these things, right? So, as you learn more about your own responsiveness to the environment, maybe there are certain things you can avoid. But a lot of it is so, and I think that's partly what's so scary about MCS. I think that for a lot of people who want to believe it does not exist, I mean, what's at stake is that it's quite terrifying for them to consider that perhaps they could develop these symptoms themselves. Perhaps they even already have them, but they're not consciously aware of it, and I think Stacy Olaimo also said something along these lines, that a lot of headaches and insomnia and anxiety could very well be caused at least partly by exposure to chemical substances.
Two of the three creators of the MCS memoirs that you look at are based in the US, Peggy Munson and Susan Abbott. And Aurora Levens Morales is based in South America or Central America. I forget. Maybe you could clarify that.
I think she's been based in the US also for longer periods of time, and she's also lived in Cuba. Yes.
Okay. Well, I'd be interested in asking you your take on if you have a desire to read, watch, listen to memoirs, MCS related narratives from people who are elsewhere. So I'm really interested in finding out about people's lived experiences, and I hope to have people on the podcast if they want, if we can invite them from the Global South, for example. Also, people who are historically excluded and oppressed, marginalized, Black people, 2S LGBTQ plus people. Do you have any thoughts on that?
For sure. I mean, for me, when I started to do research on MCS, so this was part of a larger project, really looking at US contexts and how healthcare functions or does not function very well in the US. So that's partly why I was interested in MCS, precisely because of what I said, how it affects people in terms of your socioeconomic status. In a very extreme way that you will not see happening, in countries where there is universal health care, including, countries from the global south where you do have universal health care. So that's partly what interested me. But also, I think, because in the US there is so little regulation in terms of chemicals and industrialization. It is, and because there's so much consumption, people are constantly buying things, consuming objects, furniture, cars. I mean, there's just so much Houses also, I mean, new apartments just have a lot of fumes coming out. So all of this consumption and lack of regulation in the US really make it the kind of ideal setting for studying MCS because so many people are going to be suffering from it. And the thing is, I know that there are people in Europe also affected. I say Europe because that's where I live, but I have not come across these kinds of narratives. And I think part of the reason is that when you do have MCS in countries with access to healthcare, you do have way of managing your symptoms. You do find sources of support, or you can take time off work. So I have not come across MCS memoirs, autobiographies yet coming from other countries. And I'd be very interested to. I mean, I do look forward to that. I do remember seeing on social media, of course, posts from people from Canada, for example. I remember seeing posts from someone who was in Argentina. There was participation from people in different countries, but it's still very much a US-centric social media platform, MCF. I have not come across that same kind of organizing in other countries.
Yeah, and for listeners, many listeners will know I'm Canadian, based in outside of Vancouver in British Columbia on the west coast of Canada, and you're in Europe. And there are listeners across the globe who subscribe and listen to this podcast. So we know this illness is a global illness, but it's really interesting, talking with researchers, for example, a particular researcher who studied the impacts of pesticide on agricultural workers in Nicaragua. And I asked, well, are people talking about MCS? And his response was no. And I wonder if that's because, if someone is experiencing chronic kidney disease, if that takes precedent over MCS. But I also wonder if it's just like going back to what you shared earlier in our discussion, Sophia, around if we don't have other people to talk with or who say to share their, who can also say, I have MCS, we don't know. Like, for example, I lived with MCS for a really long time without knowing what it was. And I think that's quite a common thing, common phenomenon for people just to not know. And you mentioned Stacy Alamo's work. A migraine, people might not be connecting that to MCS because it's maybe just presents as a symptom. And sometimes it takes a real severe tilt event or debilitating or a real progression of the illness to really start for us to really find out or to begin exploring what is going on. And hopefully with more information available, people will know sooner because it's really helpful, I think, to know sooner than later. But we hear about, I'm in touch with people in Japan who are getting ill from heavily scented products. I can't recall the exact number, but something like a million people in Japan, many, many young people in Japan living in vehicles to try to get away from pollution in cities, entire neighborhoods that are filled with synthetic scents now. It has become a huge problem globally. And it's very difficult to find researchers who are doing research in many countries outside of North America, some in Europe, but it's a huge planet.
It is. And I mean, I think part of the what makes it quite tricky with MCS is that it goes by many different names. So, for example, studies on chemical injuries might be very interesting for MCS research, but you're going to find them in a completely different category. of biomedical knowledge. I mean, what distinguishes MCS is that the exposures are minimum, right? So the exposures are way below what is considered to be a proper chemical exposure in biomedical discourse. So, I mean, that complicates things a great deal. I wonder, for example, it's also a language barrier because in there, in each different country, you're going to have different names for MCS. So, whereas in the US, there's a huge population. So if there's a great deal of writing or thinking about MCS over social media, you can find that research. So you can search multiple chemical sensitivity and you are going to find this body of work. But in, for example, in Germany, I don't know what the exact term would be that I would use for searching for something similar in Germany. I mean, probably the term would actually be coming from a US context. That would be the term people would be organizing around. And then there are going to be lots of different terminology that is going to be applied in Germany along the lines of allergy or environmental disease. So just different terminology also makes it more difficult to find these connections. Like in Japan, I wonder what the term is. Are they using multiple chemical sensitivity like the from a US context, do you know?
I'm not sure.
Or
It's a good
do
question.
people, right? Yeah.
But if people are
Yeah,
listening
it's
and they are in
right.
other countries and you want to, get in touch with me and share your story on the podcast, it's really on my radar. It's a priority and sounds like it'd be interesting for you too, Sophia. But maybe as we move towards perhaps wrapping up our chat, which has been super interesting, do you recommend people A, read, watch these MCS memoirs, and B, if they're inclined, a lot of people already doing it, as you know, on social media, continue to do that or go deeper, create longer, more in-depth works of autobiography?
Well, definitely. I mean, I think people, if they are experiencing MCS symptoms, I think it's a very good idea to keep a journal, to keep a record of those symptoms. And if you feel inclined to share those narratives, they're important for other people with MCS and they're definitely very important for researchers. So I would encourage everyone to do that. If you want to check out the MCS memoirs we've been talking about, I believe Susan Abbott's films are available on Netflix in the US, and I think they are available. Is it on Netflix or on
Yeah.
Amazon? I'm not
And I'll
sure
share a
right
link.
now.
I'll definitely share links to all of these works for listeners where people can get their hands on them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Peggy Munson has a fabulous website with, blog posts going back like 20 years. It's like a fabulous record. And Aurora Morales also has a very solid website with a lot of material. So if people cannot afford to buy a book or can't find a way to access a book, there's, websites that they can use. And yeah, I mean, social media can be a wonderful resource. I'm not on Facebook anymore, but I know there are quite a few MCS groups on there where people share information. So maybe that's something people want to look at. And I mean, most of all, I would urge everyone to develop an awareness of their environment and really take a little bit of an audit of the world around you. Look at your apartment, look at your workspace, look at how you travel to work, and just think about how many toxic substances you might be exposed to. And if you feel inclined, maybe stop consuming some of those chemicals if you're able to. Maybe it's a household detergent, maybe it's an air freshener, maybe it's a perfume that you decide to stop buying, that you stop using. So I would urge people to consider that if they're able to do an audit of their environment and stop using certain products. And I mean, certainly put pressure on your politicians, put pressure on your legislators, demand more scent-free spaces, demand that classrooms are made more available for people with MCS. And talk to others, you know, like we were saying, the loneliness, the isolation of MCS is something that we can counter a little bit just by talking to each other and just having conversations. And we need to have these conversations for many different reasons about the environment, about toxic chemicals, about pesticides. The more we can talk to each other, the more we'll learn. That's what I believe.
Sophia, do you view these autobiographies that you analyzed as feminist texts? And if so, what
I
makes
mean,
them so?
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, in particular, feminism as a movement that is all about inclusion and accessibility, and you know, very particularly in terms of disability rights and disability justice. Connecting it also to racial justice, environmental justice. I mean, all of these have been so important for feminist movements. Of course, you know, feminism is becoming more standardized and more institutionalized. So I don't want to speak for all feminisms, but certainly feminisms that are dedicated to social justice and inclusion. So I do read these narratives as feminist. I mean, also because within feminism, there's always been historically a tradition of making the personal political, right? So that was a big part of second wave feminism. So when I look at memoirs, I'm also taking part in that movement of, you know, taking personal narratives seriously and considering them as also, you know, moments of political intervention.
Well, thank you. Would you like to share anything else?
Well, there was something that you included in the Touchstones, which was my view on the word sensitivity,
Yeah.
which I think is actually a really good question. So I do think that sensitivity is perhaps an unfortunate term. I think it's not very accurate. I think it might not be very useful. I do prefer intolerance. I think that's getting more at what I have seen people experience and what I have experienced myself. But on the other hand, words have power. If someone feels empowered, you know, accepting and really making it part of their identity and of their activism, this you know, placeholder of multiple chemical sensitivity. I'm not saying that we do away with the term, but have to be quite critical of it because this notion of sensitivity, which is also used for food sensitivities, just can make it seem like it's not very serious, and it can make it seem like it's too subjective and personal. So I would advocate change to intolerant rather than sensitivity. I think that's more accurate and maybe a more useful term.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And we've certainly heard people, we've heard other people share the view, and I think it's a really productive and interesting discussion. And in your chapter, you write the reactions that people with MCS have to chemical exposures are, quote, inadequate by not reacting enough. Perhaps they should be reacting more or in more straightforward ways by upping their immune responses to low-level chemical exposures and end everyday air pollution.
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of presume that if someone is chemically insensitive, there is that they're not they're not having a response. that is necessarily a good thing, but it isn't, you know, and maybe they are nuanced, it's not visible or not noticeable yet. So I think we have to modify our standard for what we think is normative or desirable response to chemical exposure, because we just don't know. And it's a fact that a lot of people are getting very sick by being exposed to chemicals, and we have to take that seriously.
And thank you so much. And I really appreciate all this that you've shared and that you do, as you say, take these personal narratives very seriously. It's really refreshing and really amazing. So thanks for what you do. That brings us to the end of this episode of the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast. Thank you very much to Sophia Verino for speaking with me. Find us on social media. Just search for the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast or Podcasting MCS. Leave your comments about anything you hear on the podcast, and please share the podcast with others. Find the podcast on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search for the Chemical Sensitivity Podcast, click subscribe, and you can read captions in any language you like. Please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to help others learn about the podcast. And if there's someone you'd like to hear interviewed on the podcast or a topic you'd like us to explore, just let us know. Email info@chemicalsensitivitypodcast.org. Thank you for listening and for your support.